This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hi, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is David Ji, Director, Head of Research and Consultancy for Greater China at property consultancy Knight Frank. David has more than 18 years of research and consultancy experience in Greater China. We talked about the different segments of the Chinese property market, China's ghost cities, and investment opportunities for long-term institutional investors. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, David.
Hi,
so let's talk about the Chinese property market.
Okay.
The market has been recovering a little bit
after
the government's loosening policies.
Yeah.
Where do you think the Chinese property market is right now in terms of this market cycle?
Well, if you look at this, the process, how the policy is working, it takes quite a long time. You know. In the past, when government is actually imposing the house purchasing restrictions, it took about 4 or 5 years before the housing prices coming down. So I would imagine the current sort of encouraging policies will take some time before the price finally sort of stabilize. So what I'm seeing the market at the moment is actually at a sort of stabilizing but recovering stage, early recovering stage. So still some time to go before it actually goes up really high like in the past few years.
So are you part of this group of people who believe that the Chinese property market is in a paradigm change, that it's going to, dynamics is going to change forever? We're never going back to the past stage where you see very high rate of property prices increases every year.
Well, I don't know which camp I'm belonging to, but I have a belief that the past ways of government intervention driving the market dynamics is not going to be lasting very long in the future. The government has to change, rely on more on the market dynamics themselves, mechanism themselves, and their role is not going to be the major driver of the markets. They have to establish a mechanism, say law or property tax and so on and so forth, so the market can adjust themselves in the future. So this is something that I believe in, that they have to work on for the long-term benefit of the market.
You mentioned property tax, which
which
is under discussion right now.
Yeah.
What's your view whether when and how the government should roll that out?
Well, we are in Hong Kong now. If you look at the Hong Kong market, government intervention in the markets, physical intervention is very rare. Of course, recently there's some tax being imposed on overseas purchasings. But in general, there's a very healthy tax and rates and very sort of financial regulations are in place, and it's been operating for a long time. And the government doesn't do one-off policy adjustments to the market. And this is something that maybe the Chinese government will take a reference from.
So ultimately, what's your view in terms of like property tax initiation in mainland China?
Well, at the moment, it's been experimenting in China. The level of success is varied from city to city. But I think it's ultimately, this is still early stages yet, because there are so many things that to be sorted out. But I think this is something that they have to do. And it's, even if it's early stages, you have to go tax or a more systematic way of collecting revenues from property rather than, leaving to the local authorities to to drive revenues themselves.
So for long-term institutional investors looking to invest in the Chinese property market, which segment do you think we can still obtain long-term growth from? Mm-hmm. I know one sector, which is the logistics and warehouses. Yeah. A lot of smart money are flowing into there, mm-hmm. including Carlyle, Warburg Pincus, and also Boyu Capital. Yeah. Aside from logistics, anywhere else?
Well, I was going to say logistics, but because we have experimented on the office market and retail, and there's various degrees of success from the investors. But anything to do with the current change of policies of encouraging domestic spending, moving the economy away from government investment-related sort of activities, will be good for the investors as well. So this sector could be investment in, let's say, e-commerce, or investment in infrastructure that actually drives the commercial developments and elsewhere. On the surface, it must be logistics or transportation or so on. But in relation to that, you have office markets. If it's geared towards a upstart new adventure, let's say, a new industry, then office market can be also a good investment.
Really, you're talking about like technology.
Yeah, the science parks all the science parks, or the industrial property converted into office market, office use. So even the CBD investment in office market, we see a new trend where the major tenants of CBD properties are no longer financial or banks or investment houses. New technology companies like Google, Yahoo, or any other major high-tech companies are taking up center stage in CBDs. So we are seeing this trend going on for some years now. So this is something that people invest in office markets should look into as well. So we can say multi-sector, as long as it's related to the future development of the economy.
But you would stay away from residential, most of the residential, and maybe retail?
Well, at the moment, residential market is, let's say, recovering, but it's going through so much upheavals, and it's very policy driven. So we, for an investor point of view, who don't really know Chinese government policy too well, or newcomers to the market, I would say they should stay away from residential unless there's a really solid background preparation work has been done. And in terms of, did you say retail?
Yeah, like shopping malls.
Well, it's under some kind of impact from e-commerce, because given the vast size of the country, people living in remote areas are not likely to go into shopping malls built in major cities. But shopping malls built in remote areas are not necessarily going to be profitable. And this has to be related to locations, people's spending powers, the management skills of these shopping malls, so on and so forth. This is a very complicated issue. So I would exercise caution if you are looking into investing in shopping malls. And also invest in shopping malls, whether it's targeted at luxury goods or ordinary consumer day-to-day spending goods. So that kind of thing, people need to be really doing lots of homework on. So I wouldn't say it's not a sector we should avoid. It's not on top of the list, I would say.
So what is your, when we talk about the Chinese property market, I hate talking about it as if it's just one market, because first-tier city is different from second-tier city, mm-hmm. and that's vastly different from third- and fourth-tier cities.
Yeah.
And, different segments of markets are very different. If you could maybe give an outlook for where do you see the market is headed in different segments?
We used to favor second-tier cities over first-tier cities because of the fast growth. But investors recently are beginning to realize that quality of the property they invest in is far more important than to growth, because...
Well, before you go ahead, sometimes people define even second-tier cities different ways. Like you're
correct.
Defining second-tier cities as like capital cities of each province, right?
I would say, yeah. I mean, First is this, of course, is the, you know, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen.
Okay.
Second, I would say people are beginning to realize even the major second-tier cities like Hangzhou or Tianjin or are not necessarily as attractive return-wise, return versus risk, as first-tier cities. And this is especially true for foreign investors who are looking after a quality investments, investment that generates stable income, and also, say, in terms of commercial properties, attract quality tenants. So these elements are still existing mostly in first-tier cities. I would say Beijing and Shanghai in particular. And it's difficult to penetrate into remote cities other than, you know, the likes of top-tier, second-tier cities. So I would say if you look into the long term, I would still say first-tier cities, especially Beijing and Shanghai, being favored by investors.
But I mean, like, going forward, think like it's going to keep recovering, or you think it largely depends on government policy, but most people expect the government is going to loosen more, particularly after the second quarter.
Yeah.
And last month's economic data came out.
Well, if you separate the residential markets from the commercial market, I would say commercial investment is stable. It doesn't go into a very sort of a deep recession, as it were. It's just been quiet for some time. The cautious economic forecast for the next few years doesn't really impact the commercial market. Maybe to some degree retail, but if the government encourage spending, this will actually be compensated. So in terms of office market, it doesn't really have a problem for investors to look into the future growth of this market. In fact, it's more supply-demand related in terms of CBD, Grade A office, for example. In some places, there's still lack of, in Lujiazhou, in Shanghai, there's still lack of quality supply in these areas. So it's really up to the market itself, in the supply-demand or other forces, to decide the future investment trends, rather than the general trend of the entire economy.
So the residential market.
I mean, if you're a foreign investor,
right, quite,
right.
But in general, like, not really targeting at foreign investors, and where do you see the market?
Well,
going?
It's slowly recovering, and given the recent turmoil in the stock market, lots of investors are still regarding the residential market a safer bet. So residential market, residential properties, is still something that you want to put your money in if you have to invest.
So even today, so which means you still see like future residential business.
Yes, even today, and there's at the different stages, there's always different people have different risk profiles, right? So if you say the price is too high, but some people, if it's reached their investment requirement, they will go in. So at various stages, there are people going in to residential markets. So we're not too worried about that there's going to be a lack of investment in the residential market. So I would say in the long term, this segment is still going to see some growth, even if it's quiet at the moment. Yeah.
Which really presents a challenge for the Chinese government, because once the residential market, which is a very important factor for the whole overall economy.
Mm-hmm.
And once that sector cools down and the economy cools down, it impact many other building materials, many other sectors. So
yes,
the government has to loosen the policy, and if they do that, they run the risk of potentially propping up the property market even more. So it's really a balancing act they have to do, and which is very difficult.
Yeah. I think the another thing the government can do, apart from various policy adjustments from time to time, is increase supply. And they are at the moment, I think the so-called balancing act, on the other hand, they are buying time for building more units to supply, release into the market over the next few years. If they have enough supply to dilute the increasing demand for residential property, it will sort of soften the cushion, soften the impact of any policy adjustments or rush of speculative investments and so on. So the key to here is actually increased supply.
Still increasing supply.
Increased supply in the places, because you see, the my take on the so-called surplus supplies or ghost cities, is that it's not the amount of apartments being released into the market. It's rather than it's the location of these apartments. You know, in Shanghai or big cities, or Hangzhou, let's say, there's such a strong demand for housing, even for investment or for self-use. But there's not enough supply. All the supplies are in a very remote area, second-tier cities, where there's no infrastructure, no road or railways. So once those infrastructures are in place, you can see some of the so-called ghost cities are being taken up quickly. I mean, Jinan, for example, when people go there, say, look, ghost city, but now there's a traffic jam. So we're not too worried about the total number of supplies. I think in the long run, it's still more demand than supply. But it's actually the misplace of the resources. That's just a real problem.
So you see the ghost cities actually come back to life once infrastructure like subway lines, high-speed rail come.
Of course, you can't just build subway lines for the sake of building it, right? But there has to be a real demand to build the lines. So if you are building a shopping mall in the middle of the mountains, then probably you will run into problems. But let's say if it's a property is strongly out on the outskirts of a major city, all you need is a infrastructure blueprint to stimulate that market and absorb the stock. So for me, the problem really is the mislocation of these stock rather than oversupply in general.
But the mislocation of those stock can be a real problem.
It could be, It doesn't solve the shortage in the big cities. That's the problem, you see.
But that could cause a lot of problem for a lot of property developers, which could in turn cause problem for the banks, which you don't see as a major problem at all.
Well, I think it's a serious problem, but the entire system has been running on this sort of a delicate balance for years. I would imagine this balance will continue for a few years to come. As long as the developers are able to sell their units, and you can see only the recent sales figures, some major developers are doing really well, and 10% or 20% higher than last year. It goes to show that if they plan their units, their developments well, they are able to sell their units, right? I mean, the problems with some of the smaller ones are they building units at a poor location. So that could be a problem for them. But luckily, the impact of smaller developers running into difficulties is not going to be as great as bigger ones running into difficulties, as we can see in the past.
So you just see some small developers potentially run into problems, and it's not even going to be a large number of small developers going into that problems.
I would imagine the bigger developers are well covered, and they have done their homework. And so far, we haven't seen any of the major developers are running into too big problems. And they always have contingency plans to work out mitigate any risks.
Okay, great. Thank you so much,
Thank
David.
You. Okay.